Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another TheOneLiner.com podcast. I am Scott Morris, and I'm joined tonight, as always, by Drew Tavendale.
Hello.
And old Craig today. His computer has melted, so it is left to us with the unmelted computers to cover a selection of films, five to get through, so won't mess around with any convoluted instructions. We'll just get cracking. For The Lovely Bones, New Zealand's favourite directorial son, Peter Jackson, takes a break from massively budgeted CG-filled epic actioners to return to adapt Alice Sebold's presumably much-loved novel. Little Susie Salmon, played by someone who I cannot possibly pronounce, Saoirse Ronan? Something like that. She's American. Why has she got that crazy?
Why has she got an Irish name? I don't know. Saoirse, I think. I believe that's what Tony Hawk's called his fridge, which is why I know how to pronounce it. But she's not a fridge.
Tony Hawk's the comedian, not the skateboarder, I assume.
Yes.
Fair enough. So little Saoirse lives a relatively cosy family life with her mother, Rachel Weisz, and her father, Mark Wahlberg, and her siblings. This peace is soon shattered when she's murdered by neighbour Stanley Tucci, a crime which she appears to be getting away with. But Susie's spirit is not going to take this lying down. Rather than head off to heaven, she hangs around in her own personal dreamscape, occasionally impinging enough on reality to inspire or bother people in the land of the living. Principally, she's lending her ghostly moral support to her father, who refuses to give up on the hunt for her killer long after the police do, his obsession putting serious strains on an already devastated family unit. Sounds something like a cross between Scooby-Doo and a family counselling session to me, but how does it sound to Drew Tavendale?
Well, I don't like Scooby-Doo, but I think I'd rather watch an episode of that. It's an absolute mess of a film. It's probably five different genres in one, and it doesn't manage to do a single one of them well.
Yeah.
It's got a family drama that's really boring and just can't be held up by Marky Mark's lack of emotional ability. The strange CGI afterlife stuff is tedious and seems to serve no purpose. The serial killer bit, he seems to be more incidental than anything else. I mean, there's no exploration of quite how his methods or his personality or anything. He's more just a plot device for most of it. The bit that, well, alongside the portrait of a serial killer, the other bit that might have made it a more compelling and interesting film is the police procedural bit, which doesn't proceed. Supposedly a teen romance too, which appears to have happened despite the fact they've never met.
But who's to let that stop in the way of true love?
And it's really dull. I'm really struggling to understand why, if this is in any way representative of the original novel, it turned out to be a bestseller. Because it's really boring.
Yeah, I've got to agree. I mean, certainly, it's never a good place to go for informed commentary, but pretty much every review on the IMDb user comment says that this is a completely bastardised, hobbled version of the novel with all the character depth stripped away, and I can believe them for once. It does seem like everything's paper thin in this film. Even though, intellectually, I kind of recognise that most of the performances aren't dreadful in here, and it's by people who I would normally like anyway, but even then I just struggled to care one iota about anyone in it.
Yeah, well, the only person I did actually care about was Rachel Weisz's character, just because I thought she should probably be punched in the face for abandoning her family. I just didn't feel any connection to any of the characters, and the whole dreamscape stuff seems utterly out of place. It adds nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I quite like Mark Wahlberg, but he just doesn't do emotional very well.
Yeah.
And certainly wasn't providing anything here, and you just can't care about any of the characters.
No, it started off boring me quite early, and it just kept on boring me until the end, which is never a good sign.
I was bored within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, if you're not engaged and you don't care about any of the characters in these sort of situations within about the first quarter of an hour, then there's almost no point watching the rest of it, and there wasn't for me in this case.
Yeah, and then also just another, it's a bit of a pet peeve of mine, but there seems to be the use of CGI in a lot of films for the sake of it, it seems. And this film isn't immune. I mean, the dreamscapes all being CGI, that made sense. It's meant to be sort of fantastical and wonderful. But there is a scene where a character has a fall and turns into some strange, really, really dodgy CGI dummy. As if you just get a stuntman or something.
Yeah.
And it's really awful. I mean, it wouldn't have passed muster 10 years ago. It looks that unrealistic. So,
yeah,
nowadays.
And odd that it's coming from Peter Jackson, of all people, who has probably more experience with CG than anyone outside of James Cameron at the minute, and you would think he would know better.
Apparently, because Weta were pretty much booked solid with Avatar, he couldn't get to use Weta, his own studio.
So it's Avatar, the interns from Weta doing this.
Yeah, well, he had to go to somebody else. I don't know whether it was ILM or what, but they've done a less than fantastic job. But then, given how crappy Avatar looks. The web haven't exactly done a great job with that, so I'm not quite sure where the problem lies here.
Yeah, so Lovely Bones, not to be recommended. I will say, in its better moments, it reminded me a little bit of Zodiac, but with kind of layers of sentimental bullshit and spiritual nonsense layered on top of it. So if you want a recommendation for some kind of murder mystery, I think you'd be far better off taking out Zodiac and watching that instead, a film which is actually, you know, good.
Yes, and interesting.
We last saw Pierre Morel directing Liam Neeson stomping around Paris in Taken, and From Paris with Love follows a fairly similar game plan. Ambassadorial aide and junior CIA T-boy James Rees, played by Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, has a hankering to move up the spy ladder, and he gets his opportunity when he's partnered up with the CIA's Charlie Wax, played by John Travolta, who seems to be a kind of hybrid of special agent and a wrecking ball. What follows is nominally a tour through the Paris underworld, dealing with drug-dealing gangs and terrorists in a violent investigation that pretty much doubles Gay Paris' homicide rate.
Monsieur Tavindel! Hoi hoi ho!
C'est boss!
Yes, yes, indeed.
Or whatever the French equivalent of testicles is, this is it. It's crap. I was really quite fond of Taken. It was in no way meant to be taken seriously, but Liam Neeson had the power needed, the presence needed to play the character. He just went about beating people up in an amusing way. And Pierre Morel has utterly failed to replicate that formula here. It's a bog standard storyline with pretty much disinterested actors and a phoned-in performance from Travolta. And I thought, looking at the trailers, I knew it was going to be very, very silly.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that if the unhinged, crazy Travolta that turned up in Face Off had appeared in this, it might have been fun.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He would have just turned up and read the silly things out of the plot. And from the beginning, it didn't grab me at all. I largely spent most of the film just thinking, this is stupid. This is stupid. A bomb's gone off and these people are screaming. There was the automatic rifle gunfight just a moment ago, and the other bomb. Nobody bothered then. This is stupid. We found this thing. This is how they've been tracking us. But nobody's been tracking you at all. This is stupid. it's a badly crafted, generic piece of crap. It's really a B-movie with an A-list star, and it's just got a sort of tacked-on buddy film in it with no chemistry between the two leads at all. It fails in pretty much every count.
Yeah, the lack of chemistry was at least one of the biggest things, I mean, for me, that kind of sunk this film. I know Taken was criticised for being exploitatively violent, but I felt that it worked because it was fun and Liam Neeson had the character and the screen presence to actually pull this off. Plus, he had some kind of convincing reason for actually going through on this and having some. You know, I'd imagine if someone did take my daughter away from me, not that I have a daughter, but you would want to extract as much vengeance as possible, and it felt like it made sense in the context of the film. But this is just a really loosely linked series of pretty poor action scenes that have no flair, no imagination, and that just really didn't work for me. There's no chemistry between Rees and Travolta, and even with Travolta's usual gurning, which is pretty much all he does these days, it's far more annoying here than I remember it being anywhere else. Plus, it doesn't help that Travolta himself is some years removed from being believable as an action hero, so it's just very, very substandard and everything. I can't think of any reason to recommend it to anyone. It's everything that it tries has been done better many times before. So why watch this?
We both very much liked Taken, didn't we?
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Taken, you're probably just better off just watching that again and avoiding this.
Very disappointing. Although, probably the first misfire from Pierre Morel, District 13. His first film was actually pretty good as well. His first film that I've seen.
I've never gotten around to catching up with that yet.
Yeah, I'll allow him this turkey, but he's on notice.
I'm not sure how well it bodes, though, that his next film is apparently June.
Yeah, well, June's a bit of a... I've got a real soft spot for June, because I love the book, and the film adaptation is just sort of mental enough that I can give it a pass, despite not actually being much good.
I very much like David Lynch, but I thought even David Lynch couldn't do that film. I thought the original Dune film was terrible, so I'm more than a little worried about what Pierre Morel will do with it.
Not being much of a horror guy in the best of times, I hadn't realised that The Crazies was a remake, in this case of George Romero's 1973 original. In retrospect, his fingerprints are still seen in Breck Eisner's remake. A small American town, Ogden Marsh, seems like a happy enough place for Sheriff David Dutton, played by Timothy Olyphant, and his wife, Dr. Judy Dutton, played by Radha Mitchell, to raise their impending child. But That's before an unfortunate outbreak of the crazies, as an accidental release of an experimental biological weapon into their water supply turns people into destabilised, violent shadows of their former selves. Cue an overzealous army containment response that the Duttons and the few around them still not touched in the head do their damnedest to run away from. While it does feature just about the only cinematic instance of a competent sheriff's deputy in Joseph Anderson's portrayal of Russell Clank, does it have anything else to recommend to it?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, no. It's far from the worst film I've ever seen, but as with pretty much any film of this type, it's one of the reasons, one of many reasons really, that I dislike most horror films, is that to really care about the film, you have to care about the characters. And while Timothy Olyphant and Radha Mitchell are only a step above the normal faceless teens that you get in most shitty horror films, they just don't have any charisma. Ergo, I don't care about them, and I therefore don't really care about the film. I was more or less bored by it, though I would agree with your assertion that it was the one competent sheriff's deputy there's possibly ever been. But I was just bored by it, and by the end I was just finding it stupid. And I know, as we discussed coming out of the cinema, there isn't actually, nobody ever says there's going to be a cover-up, but I think it's fair to assume that there must be, and then the cover-up that they're going to have makes no sense. And I just got distracted with that. I didn't care about the people at the end. I was just annoyed with the stupid things happening around them.
It's a film that seems to have mistaken the word mediocre for a mission statement, isn't it? which I suppose I shouldn't be surprised by, because Eisner's last film, The Sahara, which again was entirely competent in pretty much everything it did, but completely unexciting in every respect as well.
Yeah, I suppose the thing about Sahara, though, was it does have Steve Zahn in it, who's got some charisma, who's got some screen presence, whereas the stars of the crazies have nothing.
To be honest, there's nothing that I can look at here and say that I actively disliked, but there's not really anything there that I can say that I liked either. It's just a big, chewy, empty calorie of a film, isn't it? And certainly nothing that's not been done better many times before, and I would imagine will be done better this year, let alone in the future. So nothing at all to recommend to it.
I actually found myself spending quite a lot of time, as I said, I was quite bored, but so I spent quite a lot of time wondering exactly what the director was on. So it must have been you said to me, I think, beforehand, that the director had said that this wasn't a, or the filmmakers in general had said that this wasn't a zombie film. And as I'm watching this poor zombie film, I was wondering, especially now that you've told me that the original was by George Romero, that how exactly he considered that it wasn't a zombie film.
It's basically, he must be one of those tedious pedants that think that 28 Days Later isn't a zombie film. Because they're not technically dead. As I think Ebert said, if it walks like a zombie film and it squawks like a zombie film, then it's probably a zombie film, but that's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the fact it's got zombies in it is a bit of a giveaway, really. I mean, just because 28 Days Later, the people were contaminated by rage-infected monkeys and they moved quickly doesn't mean they weren't zombies. Mm. And the same goes for this.
So there's an official technical definition of a zombie, which probably, if there is, Romero probably wrote it. Zombies, the vampires. South Korea might not be churning out quite the volume of boundary-pushing movies that it has done of late, but it normally pays to keep an eye on Chan-wook Park, director of such awesomeness as Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Oldboy. His last outing, I'm a Cyborg, But That's Okay, left me a little cold, despite the awesome title, but I had hopes for his latest film, Thirst. I'm going to leave the detailed plot summary to better people than I, but in a nutshell, as far as I can gather, Priest Sang-hyun, played by Kang Hoo-song, is transfused with blood during a particularly poorly explained and seemingly completely pointless medical experiment, and in an unintended side effect, he's turned into a vampire. Going back to his old life, he's now inconvenienced with the thirst for human blood conflicting with his sense of morality, and also finds that an old friend's wife is prompting an entirely different thirst that threatens his celibacy. Drew, you're pretty much fresh off watching this, so what, if anything, do you make of it?
For quite a lot of it, I was thinking, eh? What? For the rest of it, I was thinking, this is very, very dull, can it end now, please? And then, variously, eh? Yeah, I was very much looking forward to this. Park Chan-wook is fantastic. This Vengeance trilogy films are amongst my favourites, I would say, certainly in Asian cinema. And I thought a South Korean take by Park Chan-wook on the vampire genre, that sounds really quite interesting. But rather than being, you know, a good vampire film like 30 Days of Night, it's more or less gone along the lines of Twilight, which was a turgid relationship drama that just happened to have vampires. This is more or less a fucked up relationship drama that just happens to have vampires. And I just couldn't get into it. Only the last 30 minutes, I found it quite entertaining, but given I had to sit through an hour and 40 minutes of various boredom and bewilderment to get to it, it's not worth it. I just found it uncompelling. The story is baffling when it's there and mostly absent. I don't have a lot to say other than just, I didn't like it and wouldn't I recommend anybody sees it.
See, I'm a few days distant from this, so I've had a few days to kind of sort it out in my head, and I think I can see some of what Park's intent was in this film. For a film where seemingly nothing happens in it, there's quite a lot to unravel there if you can be bothered. You can pull elements of man's morals versus instincts, which is, you know, obviously one of the main tropes of vampire films. And if nothing else, it's interesting to see a different culture's take on a vampire film, given that most American films these days are largely either tepid romances or leather-clad, crappy action films. So yeah, you have things like last year's Let the Right One In, which was at least interesting as much as it dealt with the humans who are attracted to vampires' problems as they live with someone who's seemingly immortal, although in the end it was a slightly dull film. It was at least different, whereas this film, the entire second act might as well not have any vampires in it at all. It's a fairly standard love triangle. Well, I say standard. Problem I had with this film is that although you can pull out some reasonable themes and you could make a fist of analysing it, it's just you have to do an awful lot of editing in your head to cut out all the bits that either don't make sense or simply shouldn't be there in the first place. It did seem like Park was just throwing everything that he had at the wall and seeing what stuck, and it's just an absolute mess when you're watching it.
The sort of the elements you're talking about, you know, like nature versus morality, that sort of thing, and how the character changes because he becomes a vampire. I mean, it's kind of obvious it's in there, but it should still be put in something that's in some way entertaining, surely, but that's the point of the film.
I want to know if this is actually supposed to be taken as some kind of Raimi-esque comedy, because there's some very serious themes running through the film, but all the way they're continually undermined in a way that is obviously intentional by these absolutely bananas and frankly completely out of place comedic elements, like the other member of the love triangle, the husband in this one, who's a gurning idiot throughout all of it.
The one when he appears in the middle of bed.
Well, yes, you know, after he's killed and comes back as a ghost for some reason, but is never particularly explained or mentioned really in any way at all. In fact, it just seems to be ignored. In fact, that's one of their ways to deal with it.
It was undermining any serious element to the film, but at least it made it entertaining for the first time. But the problem is, I mean, even if it wasn't such a mess, I just don't think it would be that entertaining. And
it's not.
I'm fed up of being bored by films. I mean, I love being made to think by films, but I don't want to be bored by them.
And related to that, I mean, I do like films where you can go away and think about it days later and uncover levels of meaning that you perhaps hadn't noticed on first view and first time you watched it or first time you thought about it. But that's not actually the case in this film. In this film, all I felt that I was doing was basically the job of an editor, cutting out bits that shouldn't have been there in the first place, trimming it down, just ignoring the bits that were silly and trying to sort of salvage something from a film that I'd already watched just to feel as though my time hadn't been wasted by the film. But there is no reason that anyone needs to do that. There's no reason anyone should watch the film to have to go through what I've been doing for the past couple of days, which is to try and make sense of it. There's just no point because it's not entertaining enough in the first instance to warrant it. Bit of a disappointment, again, becoming a bit of a theme so far, but I cannot recommend this to anyone at all.
Nor I.
Hayao Miyazaki should need no introduction to you, having helmed Studio Ghibli's finest animations such as Laputa, Princess Mononoke and Spirited Away. Ponyo, or as it's called in some territories, Ponyo on the Cliff by the Sea, introduces us to a 5-year-old lad by the name of Sosuke. Sosuke lives on a cliff by the sea, and you may already see where this is heading. He lives with his mother Lisa, his father being off at sea for most of the time, but life changes for him when he catches a cute goldfish one day that turns out to be the daughter of a sea goddess and a human-hating wizard, Fujimoto. He calls that goldfish Ponyo, and so great is the affection shown by Sosuke for Ponyo that after Fujimoto reclaims Ponyo to his ship beneath the sea, she vows to defy her father and return to Sosuke. Her quest will see her transformed into a human girl and accidentally unleashing a tide-raising tsunami that wreaks havoc upon the human world. Drew, thoughts, opinions, helpful hints, recipes?
Well, you've possibly noticed by now that every film we've talked about so far, I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And would you like to guess where I'm going with this one?
I'd imagine you probably think this is the worst film of them all.
That's right, I loved it. I just found this film absolutely delightful. It's just strange because, like the film we were just talking about, there are bits of it that don't make an awful lot of sense, although in this case it's more that you have to fill in the blanks yourself and can. But it's beautiful, it's entertaining, it's delightfully drawn, it's funny. Generally, if I have any difficulty heaving superlatives on Studio Ghibli's work, this is no different. It's just the animation is so charming. There's probably the first 12 or 13 minutes has no dialogue in it at all, except for somebody saying bye-bye, which clearly would really count. And it's utterly captivating. It just... watching the beautiful drawing and things happening and the kid meeting the goldfish, and it's just got so much more charm and delight and whimsy and wonder in it than pretty much any other film I've seen in the last year. It's not perfect, it's not the best film I've seen in the last year, but it's just, I don't know, I just get so tired of CGI. I mean, things like Pixar's Up's excellent, but it just... yearn for seeing more hand-drawn animation.
Yeah, I think I could probably make an intellectual case for this being sort of Miyazaki's weakest film, possibly ever. I mean, narratively, there's not an awful lot going on at any point, and there's some uncharacteristically heavy-handed sort of environmental posturing, especially in the opening act where Fujimoto's practically beating us over the head with it. But what makes up for that is that it's simply the most charming film I think I may have ever seen.
It's absolutely delightful, isn't it?
It's so overwhelmingly positive and good-natured and innocently charming that even this cynical old wreck who's talking to you right now was sat grinning like an idiot all the way throughout it. So I can only imagine the effect that it has on normal, well-adjusted people.
It is sort of overwhelmingly positive, but it doesn't seem in any way unnatural or artificial or forced or sentimental or cloying.
Exactly. I mean, as I was saying, like an idiot, but I think like a child would perhaps be more accurate. There's always this kind of obsession with Western kids' space cinema to throw in stuff to appeal for the adults so that the appearance earlier don't get bored as they go along, whereas Miyazaki has shown us that it's simply far better to be so overwhelmingly awesome that you're reduced to the level of a child yourself.
You just have the same stuff for both of them. You don't like have, we put in this for a child and this for an adult. You just put in, this is the thing, and both a child and an adult loves it.
This film's just so good that it did make me forget pretty much all adult concerns and just enjoy it for what it is. Enjoy how overwhelmingly charming it is. There's not much more to the film than two young kids having a magical adventure and being nice to people, but that's probably the fact that makes it so special. Miyazaki's just better at characterization than anyone else in the business. It's embarrassing how good it is. I cannot use enough positive words for this at all.
Yeah.
There's more verve and more life in this than any number of 3D production line stuff that's passing for children's cinema these days. It is the most special film I've seen this year. It's easily the best film I've seen since the calendar rolled over. And it shows that the Academy Awards are totally full of shit.
Oh,
this isn't even nominated, it's just fucking beyond belief. The organisation should just fold in itself in shame. It's beyond belief.
I have no idea what's been nominated because I simply don't care. It's just such a fantastic film. The only thing I wonder is I watched the original Japanese language version of it with subtitles, and I'm kind of worried about what the English language dubbing what effect that might have had on it, particularly given that the people involved in it include Miley Cyrus and Kate Blanchett. That worries me somewhat.
Yeah.
That you kind of lose the magic of it if you've got them in. But since the version with the Japanese audio and subtitles does exist, I need never find out. And yes. I just enjoy it for the amount that I did.
Absolute genius. You've got to see this film. If you owe it to yourself. You won't be complete as a person, I think, until you actually watch this film.
Yeah, as you're saying too, about it kind of making you childlike too. There's no reason any other time that somebody just squirting water in somebody's face would be entertaining. But there was raucous laughter coming out of my mouth. Yeah, bits like that. The word I used at the start, I've also used too many times already, but... delightful, then that is, it was just a feeling of absolute delight watching this film.
It was full of delight.
Particularly given I just a week full of films that I really did not enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then just to come across this, which I'd been putting off watching for months actually, for no particular reason, but more just I wanted to see if I could see it in the cinema here, but didn't. And then it's like, I watched that bugger. I could have watched that three times by now.
Yeah. Okay, so would you say it's the best film we've seen in this podcast? It's a difficult question. Please think about it for some time.
Give me a moment. Yeah, there was that film that was crap, and there was this film that was crap. Yeah, you know, just...
yeah.
Just slips in as the best.
So by an edge, go and see Ponyo by Fair Means or Foul. I think that's probably enough for this podcast. We'll be back sometime in the next couple of weeks covering films. Yes, definitely films. We'll be talking about some films. So until that time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from Drew.
Goodbye. Badum.
I've only had my comedy dwarf drummer.